Thank you. Hi, Professor Curtis Bong. Thank you very much for being with us today. And we really appreciate your support and collaboration. And can you briefly introduce yourself so our participants can better know you?
So I can tell a couple of things that maybe people can look up when they're trying to understand what I've done in the area of online pedagogy. My name is Curt Bonk at Indiana University in the middle of the United States. We're on East Coast time, but really kind of in the mid, what's called the Midwest. And I'm a Midwest guy. I was from Wisconsin originally, from the north, and I like cold weather like you get in Norway. So I want to come back again soon. But you know, I've been fortunate to travel to Europe and to all parts of Scandinavia, and talk about online pedagogies and Asia, especially East Asia and China and Korea and Taiwan, in particular, as well as Thailand and Singapore. And people are around the world are very interested in how to enhance and extend and transform their classes when they teach online and add an element of interactivity, collaboration, and engagement. And because of that, I've developed two books that have 100 activities in them, one of which is free and you can download to use in your classes. So I'm doing research in online teaching and learning. Research in self-directed learning in particular is my in MOOCs and open education. I'm looking at Duolingo for language learning. I'm looking at one study of young teenagers in Nepal learning English through a MOOCs during the pandemic. I'm doing quite a variety of things, but it's really about self-directed learning and try to foster it. And we've come up with 15 guidelines to how to engage learners and how to foster self-directed learning that just was published last month in Open Learning out of the UK. But yeah, I'm sure most of you are constantly thinking about how to improve your pedagogy. And so that's an area that I've been speaking on. And I have two frameworks, and I'll get to the two frameworks or models, actually, maybe three or four. I have two main ones, and I'll explain them in a follow-up question. I'll stop here
Very
and
good.
I'll explain later.
Thank you. It's a nice introduction, and I think I will also refer to your books. I have started to check your publications as well. Very good. Thank you very much for raising that issue as well. And what is multimodality in a course design? How do you approach that in general?
I'm a firm believer in options and flexibility of learning. And I've got 20 principles that one of my framers called Education 2020. And one of them is about these options and frameworks and utilizing the wealth of resources that we have available today, whether they're podcast shows like this could be, you know, audio shows or webcast, video. I think that students need to have available these different options in one's class. We've moved from an age of Wikipedia to an age of videopedia. It's a video is abundant in most disciplines. What we have to think is how to thoughtfully use that in our classes. So this semester, this past fall, I've had 20 some guests come into one of my classes and 20 into another class. And I've created a playlist. So my students are graduating now this week and they can take the one link and it has a playlist to all those guest videos that they can remember the class by and take with them. So it's not just about how to enhance one's class today, it's about creating longevity, sustainability for one's class. So recording and making those links available for both your current, future, and your past students. So it becomes a community in effect. So multimodality is a way to open up one's class to the world and to invite the world into one's class. So my guest speakers this semester came from Canada in Japan and Korea and other places that we could converse with them about their research. They might be researchers And they might have written a book that we're reading, and we could ask them questions about that book or that research article, or get an update to their research. If it's an older article, we can find out what they're doing now. So multimodality involves video. In my classes, it's a lot of guests. It involves text and having a number of articles and research in my research to choose from, and not require having here's eight representative articles, read three or four this week or five. I don't want you to read all of them. So it's text, it's video, it's visualizations like animations and simulations that you make available in one's class. And the news media today often will publish an article with an interview of someone, with a video, with an animation. They've spent a lot of money creating these animations showing maybe something about paleontology and some dinosaur discovery that they just found. They're trying to reenact some scene. Well, that's a useful resource. What you have to do as instructors is catalog those resources that you find online so that you can use them. Multimedia, multimodal classes is not to wait till the last minute, but to catalog ideas for a longer period of time, and then review those different ideas and say, well, that would fit in real well at the end of the semester or at the middle, beginning or the middle. So having those available, so you're not frantically searching, you're filtering through what you have found, and it becomes more joy when you create a new class or you revise a class. But I have a model called read, reflect, display, and do. R2-D2, like Star Wars.
Yeah.
R2, so I have a lightsaber and all. But I have a book called Empowering Online Learning that goes through those four models. I also have an article that I'll send you that's freely available online that explains those four elements. So multimodal learning can help learners who prefer to read a lot or reflect or visualize, have a lot of visualization skills, or like hands-on doing. A lot of students like to try it out, right? So the fourth element of R2-D2 is hands-on doing. So, but if you're in an online class, it becomes a little more difficult sometimes to get the, but also some things can be easier. So students could collaborate with teams online. They could create a product of some kind and put up a gallery of student work. As an instructor, you can collect prior student work and put the best examples up for the next semester students. So the multimodal learning can be having a gang of best practices on display for your students of the prior work, And then you could also have the work in progress. Maybe they're using Google Documents, or they're using Padlet to post little sticky notes, or a wiki. My students have done wiki books. They've collaboratively written books together. That's a multimodal learning. My students have done a podcast show interviewing people. That's part of multimodal learning. So I hate to use the word has to be. There should be some reflective element at some point. When you do multimodal learning, it shouldn't just be the video or the audio or the animation or the simulation or Venn diagram comparison or something. Well, that's great, but it's the reflective element, or having students explain what they're learning. There's a tool called, used to be called Flipgrid, now it's called Flip, where you can do video explanations and talk to each other in short videos. So having them explain as well as reflect on what they're learning from those rich media. So the richer the media, the more powerful the learning, but you don't want to use too much as to overwhelm the student. So there's a researcher in California named Richard Mayer, who you may have read his multimedia learning book. Exactly. And he came to my class last year. He was one of my guests last year. So here is the most famous educational psychologist in the United States, probably maybe in the world at one point. Exactly. He had the most publications of anyone. And I used to be an educational psychologist. Now I'm an instructional technologist. So I know him, and he came in and he talked about his multimodal learning and what you can do to enhance it as well as to hinder it. If you have too much media and you make it confusing for your learners, then it's not helpful at all, right?
Yeah.
So you have to balance it between adding in video elements or audio or text or whatever elements you're adding in, with the fact that working memory and our processing abilities, you know, can only handle so much at one point in time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if I've answered your question fully, but
exactly.
You know, I don't want to be what some people call a learning style proponents in educational psychology. They don't necessarily endorse learning styles. We prefer to call it learning preferences.
Exactly.
And to have build multimedia in that will enable students who prefer video to go to look at an animation or video sequence or something else. Those that might prefer some hands-on activity to try it out in another format and so on. Mm-hmm. So you make these options available so people can start exploring it, but you don't require them to go in a particular order through those mm-hmm. documents. You don't require them to use all of the documents. You make mm-hmm. you have them use the ones that help them learn. The focus is on learning, not on mm-hmm. how you learned, not on when you learned, not on the path in which you learned. The only goal is that they learned.
Exactly.
So multimodal learning opens it up. So you're not pre-packaging. You're enabling them to get curious about a topic and explore those topics.
Exactly.
You're enabling students to select the learning elements that are intriguing to them at a point in time. And that is the goal when you create multimodal learning. You don't create a path. You'll say, you got to go to this. No, sometimes you want them to watch a particular video where you discuss it. That's good. That's called learning in a context, learning in a macro context. The short video that they watch can be used as a reflective element for the next lecture or the next discussion. So you want to build on that opening introductory video, short in nature oftentimes. Mm. If you're teaching a course in economics or finance, there might be a video on the BBC that you incorporate in to your course, a short one, and then you have questions that come after that. So you can have introductory, you can have ending capstone videos that enhance the learning, but you normally make the videos available for when they want to choose them. But there's got to be both. There's got to be some instructor centeredness and some student centeredness. And you mix the two together to create an ecology or a learning environment that's effective. It's not just the learners learning on their own. It's not just the instructors instruct on their own. You need to have both in there. You need to have, whether you call it a mentor or a facilitator or a moderator or whatever title you want to give the instructor or the instructor assistants, you have to have them in the loop, as well as student choice in some way, some kind of student choice. Maybe not all the choice, maybe just a little bit of choice, maybe a lot of choice. You decide on some disciplines. You might have a standardized exam that you're working towards. You might have a little less student decisions because you have a test they have to pass for qualifying or for the medical field or whatever it is. I used to be an accountant. I had to take a test at the end, right? So we want to make sure you get some basics, you know, but then you build on that through student choice. Mm-hmm. I'll end. Let me let you ask the next question.
Yeah, very good. I mean, the students play a key role actually in how we can implement the multimodal design. They need to be very active, engaged, and even motivated, I would say. And I agree with you about the learning styles. Multimodality does not suggest that we need to consider, you know, styles, but consider how students can engage, which modality can be more useful for some students, not for others. So the next question would be, actually, you have addressed so many questions that I have planned, but the last question it will be, What would be your advice for teachers, especially in higher education, to develop their skills to learn how to design multimodality, how to engage students in multimodal resources? So what should they do to be able to learn and then implement such an approach?
If teachers want to learn how to use multimodality in their instruction, it has to be a multi-pronged approach. Number one, they need a colleague to be also working with it to talk to about what they're doing. They need to have some kind of support structures, whether those support structures are outside their institution or inside or a bit of both. Yeah. And then there has to be a sharing element. What did they try to do? And then did it work or not? Mm. And that sharing element might not be explicit. It might be more implicit in the form of a blog, reflective blog that they're using, or it might be posting to Facebook or some other social media platform that they're utilizing as what they've tried out, and to get feedback from others, Instagram or whatever their social media element. I don't know which ones are popular in Norway, but I have on my mobile phone, I have WeChat for China. I have KakaoTalk for Korea. I have Line for Taiwan and Thailand. I have Facebook for America. So, you know, people use different social media. But if you want to try all these out, there has to be a forum in which you are trying to explain what you've done. And you don't have to do it right away. You can decide maybe wait to the end of the semester and then share. But at some point, there should be some collegial nature to this. All learning is social. All learning at some point has a social element and a reflective element. We want, as Vygotsky said, the famous Russian psychologist, learning takes place on two planes. First, on an interpsychological process with other people, and then intrapsychological within. And in all learning needs to have some of both. And so if you want to move to a new kinds of transformative teaching and learning, and I have a book just out called Transformative Teaching Around the World from 22 countries. Former students of mine took a course with me on critical and creative thinking, collaboration, and motivation. And the fifth element, technology integration. They've gone back to their countries and wrote a 1,000 to 3,000 word essays on how they're using that content in their instruction. And so that they're reflecting in this book.
Yeah.
They're reflecting how they're using it, what the response was when they went back to Morocco. They went back to went four chapters from Finland. We had four from India. We had three or four from New Zealand and Taiwan and Botswana, all around the world. We had Rwanda and so forth. None from Norway. Next book. Next book.
Next book. Yeah.
And so, in the next book, I'll get you to do. But I think if you want to implement these, you have to not only have that support, you have to be reading. You have to be going to conferences and thinking about this. So you have to decide, I'm going to attend certain sessions or webinars, sign up for a series of webinars, or subscribe to newsletters. But don't do too much. Don't do too much. Try one or two things out every semester. And over time, you will have tried them out. So one, be cautious, but then reflect on what you've decided to do. Sometimes if it doesn't work the second time, you just have to change it a little bit for it to work tremendously the second time. So don't give up. Be persistent. The person who's perseverance wins the day in higher education, in any teaching, K-12 teaching. Perseverance, grit, determination, and somewhat patience and reflection and dedication, as well as collaboration and community building. So all these things. So one thing, write it down what you'd like to do a year ahead, 6 months ahead. As you see it come up, make a little note to your little side, put a little sticky note or whatever it is, and then come back to it when the class is about ready to start and think about what you might utilize, and maybe even get student opinions about those ideas that you're utilizing. And at the end of the time, have their opinions about what you could do next. What kind of multimodal elements are you not including that young people today are expecting you to be using? Yeah. Young people today are what we call phygital students. They can be in a physical world and a digital world almost at the same time. And so they can move in and out seamlessly between the metaverse or some online learning components and or a simulation, and then be back talking to you face to face. And if they don't see any much of any difference from that. So you have to start, I think, planning for that kind of student that you'll be having in the future. But we all know, so one thing about multimodal learning I didn't mention that Richard Mayer points to.
Exactly.
We have a visual track and a textual track, imaginal memory and verbal memory. And if we have things stored both imaginally in a video format in our brains, as well as in a text format, we'll have more ability to access the information. We'll have more pathways. So multimodal learning creates pathways in your brain for the retrieval mechanisms and the priming mechanisms from the instructor. When they mention something, that primes that knowledge from the video clip on the BBC we watched last week. Well, we can just mention that, and then all of a sudden that knowledge comes up. You see? And so why do we want multimodal learning? We want to have multiple paths to retrieve it. There's a difference between available knowledge and accessible knowledge. Available knowledge is called tip of the tongue. We remember, but it's there. Well, we can't retrieve it, but we want to have it accessible, not just available, but accessible. So those nodes have to be fired at sufficient strength to retrieve those pieces of information or knowledge or whatever it is that you're trying to talk about in class. So that's why multimodal learning is important. Schema theory. We remember things, the gist of what we've seen. We have representations in our brain for what a tree looks like or a fire truck or whatever we're talking about, a dinosaur. We have representations in our brain. So if we can build new schemas for students, hierarchical structures with video, like shared online videos or with an animation sequence or simulation or a game you might put into your class. Students love games. There's a professor in Norway who built Kahoot. You might have know the he's a Norwegian computer science professor, I believe, right? And I talked to him a couple of times. He's great. We use Kahoot in America a lot. So you might have gamify your classes somewhat, and that might arouse curiosity. That might spring students to action. But there are a number of things you can do besides gamify or besides using video. As I said, we use Wikipedia. Basically, they have a subsidiary called Wikibooks, and my students wrote books in a couple of my classes and shared those internationally and did that. So I'll mention my other second model of instruction called Tech Variety. The reason to mention Tech Variety is a free book. And now it's not just one free book, it's two free books.
Yeah.
So if you go to the web and type in TEC, tech, not an H, but you could put an H, it would still work, TEC-Variety. You can get my free book called Adding Tech Variety, 100 plus activities for online learning, learner retention and motivation. So it's called Adding Tech Variety. That book has been downloaded it came out in 2014. It was downloaded 250,000 times in 2 years. So it may be close to a million times now. That book is available in Chinese. If any of you speak Chinese, probably you don't. It's in English and Chinese. Just last month, or September, 2 months ago, we came out with a new version, brand new. It's on supporting, motivating and supporting online learners. If you go to my homepage and look underneath my picture, you'll see that book there, both books you'll see there on my homepage, kurtbonk.com, CURTBONK.com. That second book is published by the Commonwealth of Learning in the UK, in Canada, Vancouver. The Commonwealth of Learning is helping all the former British colonies to help the teachers in those places in the developing world learn how to teach in these online environments. So if you go to col.org, commonwealthoflearning.org, COL, they've got many free resources on blended learning, just lots of things on open educational resources, and they're fabulous people. The reason I mentioned that, they've put a free class. So they not only published the new book, it's basically a shortened version of the first, it's an updated version and shortened version to the first book, but they also put a free class. So you can go through a class on how to motivate students, how to embed videos into your classes. There are 100 activities in the book that are talked about in the free course. So I have the R2-D2 model, and I haven't mentioned the Tech Variety. Tech Variety stands for 10 motivational principles. So tone, encouragement, variety, autonomy, relevance, interactivity, engagement, tension, and yielding products. So, you know, tech, I think I maybe missed a curiosity in there. I missed one of those elements anyhow, the C. But there are 10 motivational principles based on decades of research from psychology. So I used to be an educational psychologist, and I read many books on motivation. And I distilled all that knowledge and summarized all of it into that one framework called Tech Variety. So that framework is 10 principles. It really is more than 10 principles. It's really much more than that. So I recommend that you take a look at the Tech Variety model and in your own instruction, and think about how you can embed and use that in your own teaching and learning situations. I hope that you can feel free to write to me, and you know, on my homepage, all my presentations are available for free. I have a website called trainingshare.com. All my publications that are open access are at publicationshare.com. So you have to believe in the power of sharing. Once you believe in the power of sharing, teaching becomes easier online because friends will find you, you'll correspond with other people. And so multimedia or multimodal learning is part and parcel to everything I do, but I don't have to reflect on it. It comes naturally. It's what I try to do in my classes. So do you have any follow-up questions, Keenan, for me?
Exactly. I mean, it's really a great discussion that you're, you know, mentioning several psychological issues, social issues, cognitive issues as well. And these are interlinked to me because, I mean, teaching is not just a transmission of knowledge, but creating an environment where students and teachers can engage in interaction, can co-construct knowledge. And one of the key messages I got is like, keep students actively productive, digitally productive, so that they can actually be designer and producer of their learning process, I think. So thank you very much for all this information. And I will stop the recording now, and just to be
okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
So let me jump down. Let me grab that book. I want to show you.